Dennis Walters has, in his own words, been on tour for more than 40 years. With 3,000 events under his belt, Dennis has travelled the world, played at most of the great golf courses, including Augusta, St Andrews and Pebble Beach, and has touched the lives of tens of thousands of people. I came across Dennis through a business acquaintance, Beth Major from the United States Golf Association, who recommended that I spoke with Dennis as he had a wonderful story to tell. Thanks, Beth. I was certainly not disappointed. Dennis and I chatted for a couple of hours and got into some deep detail on the construction of his chair and other minutiae. We had a few difficulties with the internet connection, but managed to get enough good material to tell this story, which essentially is one of devotion to a sport and to a calling. Please enjoy this story of Dennis Walters. Dennis started his love affair with golf right from the get-go. Starting at just 8 years of age, he was captured by the nature and the wildlife that he found on the course and was intrigued by the way the golf ball cut through the air, along with the effortless swings of the top players he saw. Like many at that age, putting was great fun, and he spent hours rolling the ball across the smooth green surfaces towards the mini flags on the putting green. In just 4 short years, he had decided that golf was going to be his life and that the tour was where he belonged. Dennis worked hard at his game to take his place, lining up against some incredibly talented players.
Well, the first time I found golf, I actually found it on my own. I was walking to school, and on my way to the school, I knew there was a golf course back there, not too far off the road. And I was about 8 years old, and I kind of ventured over there. And I had to go through the woods to get there, of about maybe about 150 yards worth of woods. And so I said, I'm going to go see what this is all about. And before I even got to the golf course, I liked it because I saw a deer, some squirrels, heard the birds sing, and I popped out of the woods there, and I was right by the 18th tee of our local golf course. And I just happened to see a guy hit a ball off the tee, and it went about 200, I'm guessing now probably about 250 yards. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a lot further than I can throw a baseball or kick a football. So I was kind of intrigued by the flight of the ball. And I went home that day, and I told my dad, and he asked me if I would like to go check it out further. And I said, sure. So we went to the local golf course, and it was kind of like a semi-private course. It was open to the public. You could be a member, and it wasn't. The thing about the course was everybody knew it was a good golf course, but it was in pretty bad condition. The condition was never very good, but we knew it was a good golf course. Now, and not to get off the subject, but about 40 years later, when I wrote it's actually more than that, probably about, maybe 40 years later, when I wrote a book, we did some research, and we found out that the course was built by a guy named Ward Wilkins, which that doesn't mean anything except for the fact that he was the number one assistant to A.W. Tillinghast. Okay. And Tillinghast actually got the job, but he felt like his assistant was ready for his first job, and so he gave him the project. But they say Tillinghast was out there all the time, which is it makes sense to me because the layout was fantastic. So anyhow, we went and talked to my dad. Took me to the golf pro, and I told him I wanted to try to learn how to play golf. And he gave me a club. Sooner or later, he gave me a golf club, which, again, is relevant to today because The golf club that he gave me was a cut down Robert T. Jones Jr. driver. And he also gave me a 6-iron. And so when I went to the Bob Jones Awards dinner at the U.S. Open this year, I took that club. I still have it. The club, I've had the club for 60 years, and it was old when I got it. And so I took it with me, and I used it as my visual aid to demonstrate the fact that ever since day one in my golf career, I've had a connection with Mr. Jones. And now I was getting his award, and the whole thing came full circle. And the other interesting part about that is that Jack and Barbara Nicklaus were my presenter for the award. And when I showed the club to Jack, he said, "That's like the first, just like the one I had when I started. I got them from my dad."
Really?
So, yeah, so I thought those were two tremendous coincidences.
With a passion for the game that knew no bounds, Dennis improved a lot and ended up playing on the team of the North Texas State University on the Tucker Intercollegiate Tour. He was one to watch and frequently locked horns on the golf course with players such as Craig Stadler, Lenny Watkins, Jerry Pate, and Andy North. All four of these players went on to win at least one professional major championship. Dennis produced some stellar play as a college player, winning many medals as the leading amateur and just missed out by 2 strokes to earn the trip of a lifetime to play the Masters. In those days, they took the leading 8 players from the US amateur, and although agonizingly close, he would make that trip to Augusta to play much later in life. The next step in his career plan was the South African Tour. The so-called Sunshine Tour was for many years a fantastic grounding for aspiring players from America and Europe. The standard of competition was high. The course is excellent and the weather perfect. Once again, Dennis had the opportunity to sharpen his skills against players such as Gary Player, Hugh Bayocchi, and the Henning brothers. After a few months of learning the vagaries of grain on the green, and playing at high altitude in Johannesburg, Dennis was ready for going to the US Tour qualifying school. What he didn't know is that just a few months later he would be wholly devastated after a freak accident in which there was not a mark on his body, but one that would leave him paralyzed. Dennis had been going to see his coach, who was out on the golf course, and so he got in a buggy and went to find him. Dennis came to a curve on the cart path, and his 3-wheeled buggy tipped him out and left him laid out on the ground. Dennis could not feel any pain, checked himself out, hands, arms, head and legs. Not a scratch could he find. No blood, no pain. But then he realized he could not get up and could not move his legs. Finally, others came to his aid and got him in the ambulance, which took him to hospital. This was to be his new home for the next 4 months. Dennis couldn't believe what had happened. He was devastated. Not only were his hopes of tour school dashed, but then he started to think that despite the best efforts of the doctor and their continual assurance that he would gain back the feeling in his legs, perhaps this would not be the case. His fears were confirmed when he spoke directly to the doctor and asked him point blank if there was any hope. In the time that it took to fall out of a buggy, the doctor answered matter-of-factly that Dennis would never walk again. So how can someone who was already devastated get any lower? Dennis says that he was as low as any human could ever be. In fact, he was tied for first. "I simply could not believe it," he says. "Why me? Why now?" Answers would come later, not perhaps the answers he wanted to hear, but come they would. Dennis would not accept the prognosis and said to his doctor that one day he would go back and hit golf balls to prove him wrong. Who knows how much Dennis actually believed that he would? Perhaps not even Dennis. But the die had been cast. Another 4 months of rehabilitation came and went, and then one day, a couple of years later, he was lying on the sofa with his head on his father's lap as they watched golf on TV. Dennis was watching his friends, the players he competed with for so many years, playing in a tournament. And he could not help thinking that he should have been there with them. The words, "Why me? Why now?" came back again and he started to cry. Dennis's father was a strong man. He'd been in the military and had a stiff jaw and a warm heart. The sight of his son sobbing in front of the TV was too much for Bucky. "Let's go and hit some balls," he suggested. For Dennis, lying on the sofa, as low as it is possible to be, and paralysed, hearing these words was enough to shock him out of his depressed state. Before he knew, Dad had got him in his chair, thrust his Byron Nelson 3-wood into his hand, and was wheeling him across the street. Covered Bridge Golf Course had an indoor practice net, which was used during the winter months. This was ideal for Dennis to take those first few tentative swings. After those swings, Dennis could tell that he was going to find it difficult to hit the ball. "My knees are in the way," he said. Dad gave it some thought, left Dennis and went back home, only to return a few minutes later with a TV cushion. This cushion was fairly chunky and had wings on it so that it could be put up against the sofa to rest your back and let your arms sit on the wings. The cushion was put on the seat of the wheelchair, making Dennis sit up taller and so giving him more space to swing the club past his legs. The first problem was solved. The next issue was, now that Dennis could swing easier, the club travelled a little faster, and he was being pulled from the chair. Dad took another trip across the road back home for a belt that would help support Dennis and keep him secure in the chair. The second problem solved, and then came the daddy of them all. As Dennis would swing harder, he would tip the chair off balance, so it was simply a matter of time before the chair and its contents ended up spilt across the grass. For someone as determined as Bucky, this was simply another obstacle to overcome. Bucky had frequently said that he was stupid, because I don't even know how to spell can't. Far from stupid, he made yet another journey back home, and this time he returned with a length of rope, which he tied to the chair and then secured it to a tree behind Dennis. So here is Dennis, sat on a cushion, in his chair, with a belt holding him in, and a rope stopping the chair from moving. Now Dennis could get to practice, and not surprisingly, he did. Days turned into weeks, and Dennis was ready to continue hitting golf balls. But the weather in New Jersey was too cold. He got an invitation to visit Crystal Largo Golf Club in Pompano Beach, Florida, where he met Alex Turnier. Alex the pro was the kind of guy who knew how to fix and make things. And after a few weeks of continuous practice on the range with Dennis, they decided to go to the course. The first hole was some 310 yards, and so with the same routine Dennis had almost perfected, he sat on a cushion, fastened the strap that held him in place, and secured the rope. Out came the trusty Byron Nelson driver, and swish! Off went an arrow straight shot down the middle of the fairway. Releasing Dennis from his hitting position took some time, as did wheeling him down the fairway, where the same pre-swing routine took place before he smoothed the 5-wood just onto the apron of the green. Finally, on reaching the green, an excellent first putt left a tap-in par. Dennis was both elated that he could once again play golf and at the same time disappointed in the realization that he would never reach the level that he had before. It had taken 45 minutes, lots of effort and support for Dennis to play just one hole. Alex the pro had an idea. Alex had agreed to meet Dennis as usual at around 8 o'clock in the morning, but on this particular morning things would be different. While Dennis was still waking up, he could hear the sound of hammers and saws and arching metal. When Alex went to meet Dennis, he did so with a prototype seat mounted over the real wheel of an open-top golf buggy. This changed the game for Dennis, who could now see a different future. Dennis wanted to say thank you to the clubs and the people that helped him during those early experimental days, in which he found his way of playing the game again, despite being a wheelchair user. It was here a second accident took place, but in this case, it was a happy accident. Dennis would hit a few balls, and the onlookers would be suitably impressed. But it was when he hit a few funny shots at the end that were out of the ordinary that he really grabbed their attention. Dennis immediately realised that a few trick shots would give his spectators something that they would remember. It was the birth of what would become the Dennis Walters Golf Show. Over the months and the years that followed, Dennis would work at hitting all manner of shots, some of which he copied from the established trick shot specialists of the day, and others which he would invent from himself.
Encouraged by the fact that I was getting better. And golf, as you know, is a never-ending learning experience. Every day is an opportunity to learn or relearn something. And I went out there today. I was supposed to have a show last night. Got rained out. And I was having a little bit of trouble with my swing. And I went out there today. And I was going to take today off, but I decided to go out early and hit some balls before it got real hot. And I relearned something that I knew, and it helped me. So I've got the next 6 days, I've got 5 shows. So I'm really looking forward to seeing if it works. Because for me, I've always looked at these shows as competition, and I've always tried to see how good I could actually hit the ball. And then I've always enjoyed that part of it, because I can't play in any golf tournaments. So these are my golf tournaments, and I figure I've played in over 3,000 of them. So that's another thing that I really enjoy, the challenge of it. Can I do it when it counts? And the other thing I'm really proud of is my presentation and the way I've been able to present my message, and that is by practicing it thousands and thousands of times and actually doing it thousands and thousands of times. So that, you know, I just wanted to add those things.
For those who are steeped in golf, the name Gary Wyram would be familiar. Gary, who at the time was one of the world's best golf educators, served on the PGA of America training panel for over a decade. Gary became an advocate for Dennis, and it was his intervention in those early years that helped get Dennis a few golf shows. The first of these was with famed teachers Bob Toski and Jim Flick. Although initially Dennis was very shy and really did not have too much in his trick shot armory, he kept learning, kept developing his repertoire and improving his presentation. Those few shows turned into more, and today, with over 3,000 golf shows under his belt, he can rightly claim to be one of the best in the business. Dennis prepares for each and every show as he would have prepared for a tournament in those early years as a player. Never once, he says, has he given anything less than his best. With golf shows at Augusta, St. Andrews, and with some of the greatest names in golf, including Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player and Tiger Woods, with whom he has conducted more than 30 clinics to his credit, Dennis readily identifies with his audience.
The ball up. And I talked to him the whole show. And in addition to the gallery, I go, Mr. Palmer, you know, you're a great long iron player. I said, I want to show you my 3-iron. And so he goes, oh, yeah, let's see you hit this. So I have my three iron has 3 clubs welded together, and it's 3 balls at one time. And, you know, stuff like that. And when I got the Bob Jones Award, I had Barbara and Jack Nicklaus, who both have won that award. They were my presenters. And so, I mean, this is stuff you could, if my life was a movie, you'd say they made the whole thing. It's fiction. They made the whole thing up. And, but it's, as I look back on it, I'm thinking, how in the world did I ever do this? And I don't want this to sound I I don't know what the word is, conceited. But when I look back and I see what the heck I've done, even I got to say, wow, that's pretty good. And it just something that evolved, but it evolved into something pretty big. And I never had a plan for this. I just kept doing it.
The golf show has given real purpose to Dennis. When he first had his accident, to even get out of bed would have been a major victory, he says. Today, as he rolls onto the ranges of the world to conduct his golf show in his specially customized red, white and blue golf buggy, he has to pinch himself. He has performed in front of thousands, has met four US presidents and been on first name terms with golfing greats such as Hogan, Snead, Nelson, Palmer, Player, Nicholas and Woods. Dennis connects with people all over the world and loves every minute of his tour. I cannot play the PGA Tour as I had one day hoped, but this is my tour. I have performed in every state in Canada, Mexico and the UK, says Dennis. Dennis has had four canine companions, all rescued from animal shelters, who have contributed not only to his golf show, but also to his life. I like to think that, like me, they have had a better life because of golf, says Dennis.
I've always had a dog. I had one when I was a kid. Always loved dogs. And I've had four in my adult life. First one I got shortly after my accident. And everyone was rescued from a dog pound or an animal rescue group. First one I got from the local animal rescue group in Fort Lauderdale. And I didn't really teach her to do anything. I got her shortly after. I mean, I taught her a couple things, but nothing really in the show. And I got her when I was shortly after my accident. There were a lot of days I wouldn't even go out. And because I was so depressed and so down. And one day I told my mom, I said, you know what? I think I'm getting me a dog. So I went down and got this dog. And now I got to take care of it. So days when I wouldn't think about getting up, I got to take the little dog out. And once I'm out, we lived right on the golf course. So I got in my cart and went up and hit balls and went out and played and kept the dog with me. And had her for 13 years. When she passed away, I said, well, in the right time, I'm getting another one. And this was about the time that it was in the 80s when they were starting to have service dogs. And nobody knew. The only dog that we really knew that helped a person that needed help was a seeing eye dog. And they started to come up with these ideas for, they found that dogs could help other people do other things. Maybe they weren't blind, but maybe they needed help pulling their wheelchair. They needed help turning the light on, or they needed help in picking up things that a person dropped they couldn't reach, maybe opening a door. So you began to see a little bit of this in the newspapers or Time magazine or maybe on TV, long before the internet and long before it was accepted. And so I said, man, I'd like to teach a dog to do stuff. And so we got a little research, and it said that if the dog could pick things up for you, that would qualify as a service dog. Because I didn't need him to pull my wheelchair, or I didn't need him to turn on a light. But if I dropped something and went under a table, that would be convenient. And so, anyhow, we started to learn a little bit about a service dog. And I trained my second dog. I named her Mulligan because she was the second dog. And I trained her to pick things up and got help from a dog trainer friend of mine. Where there's no like service dog license bureau. It's just can he help you, and if you're a person with a disability, can he help you in real life? And a while after that, they wrote a law called the Americans with Disabilities Act. I think that was about 91 or 92. And so this law, the broad law that covered, like, you had to have ramps, you had to have curb cuts where a person in a wheelchair could go we could navigate through town, and then they had all kinds of housing laws, and the whole thing was a gigantic civil rights law for people with disabilities, and it took a while to implement all this stuff. And nowadays, you don't get a lot of static from having a service dog, but in the old days, you did. People would, they'd try to throw you out of a store or a restaurant, and there were some interesting episodes with that. But anyhow, I taught Mulligan how to be a service dog. Then I said, you know what, I'm going to teach her how to do stuff in the show. And so I taught her how to put a ball on a tee, and I taught her normal dog tricks, walking on her back legs, and just regular dog tricks. But I taught her to put a ball on a tee. And then I used to say to her, when you play golf, you want to hit the ball in the fairway, not in the rough. She would bark. And then I'd say, well, how does sandpaper feel? Rough. But I never thought about taking it any further. Anyhow, when she passed away, I went and rescued another dog, and I named him Benji Hogan. And Benji was great. He was, taught him to be a service dog, and I taught him all the things that Mulligan could do, only more. And I started teaching him how to do math, and I'd go, you know, I got to the point where I'd say, you know, how much is 2 and 2? He barked 4 times. Then I went into general information like how many points for a touchdown, 6 barks, one bark for the extra point, and then how many wheels on a motorcycle, and then went golf trivia, how many times did Jack win the Masters, how many times did Tiger win the Masters. And this time, and Arnie, how many times did Arnie win the Masters? And so I would show all these people that my dog, the people that were asked, that were talking about, like Tiger, and you know, how many times Tiger. So they all loved the fact that they would, they knew how many tournaments he won or this type of thing. One time, there was a guy named Jim Simons, who was a good friend of mine, and I said to him, I said, Jim, my dog knows how many tournaments you've won. So I said, how many PGA tournaments has Jim Simons win? So it was 5 barks at that time, I think. So he goes, wow, half my family doesn't know that. So we had a lot of fun doing that. And then I taught my dog now, Bucky, I taught him to do all that. So I've had 4 dogs, and I taught Bucky even more than I did Benji. So all the dogs are all the dogs have played an important role in my life. The dogs, as have myself, I feel, have had a much better life because of golf. And I try to reinforce my rescue message at every show, to tell people who are looking for a dog or a cat, an animal shelter, rescue group. It's a great place to begin your search. So hopefully we've got a few more dogs rescued. And we're never separated. Ever since I've had a service dog, we're never separated. We used to sneak Muffin in a like a duffel bag, but we the last three, they've been with me every step.
Through his golf show, Dennis is able to spread optimism and inspires people not only with his ability with a club and a ball, but also with the words he uses to connect with his audience. The maxim, if there is something you really want to do, no matter how impossible it may seem, with enough hard work and perseverance, you can do it. This is central to the message that Dennis communicates. His ability to touch people has resulted in media articles, a book, numerous speaking engagements, and awards. The PGA of America and the United States Golf Association are just two of the preeminent organizations in the United States that have presented Dennis with awards reserved for the very best in golf. In 2008, the PGA of America presented Dennis with their highest award, which previously had Jack Nicklaus, Byron Nelson, and Gene Sarazen as former winners. And just a few months ago, the USGA granted him the 2018 Bob Jones Award in recognition of his spirit, personal character, and respect for the game. Only 9 people, he says, have received both of these prestigious awards. Dennis is humbled by that recognition.
Well, one of my friends said, you know, when you start getting these awards, it means your career's over or you're really old. And I said, I think you're You know, you have a good point there. But it is like a lifetime achievement award, so you can't get it your, you know, when you're just starting out. So I get all that. And listen, I think that these are things that are pretty amazing. When you look at the people that have won these awards, they're all, for the most part, they're icons in the game of golf. And to be included with that is, it's almost unthinkable. And the other thing is, it's coming from your peers in the golf industry, from the PGA and the USGA, the governing bodies of golf. And to be recognized by your peers is, to me, is that's about the highest form of recognition you can get. And the other thing to me that's interesting is one of my very good friends, Bob Ford, who's the pro at Oakmont, he just retired, and Seminole, which are two of the greatest golf courses in the world. He's the pro at both of them. That's how good this guy is. And he's a phenomenal person, and I'm so happy he's one of my great friends. Anyhow, he won the Bob Jones Award last year, and I went to his dinner, and I was very familiar with the award, so I knew when they called me exactly what the story was. And to me, one of the interesting things about it is only 9 people that have received both of them. And every one of them is like, they're icons. And so to be included in that group is, you know, it's just nice that people recognize. Sometimes you're out here on the road. The road is brutal. And anyone who travels will tell you that. But you know what? To go forward and to... Every day is a battle. Every day is something here, there, and to go through that and to know that somebody's actually watching and paying attention, it makes you feel good, because it's every day you receive something back from the people who attend the show. I'm giving them something, and every show I'm pretty confident that most every person's leaving with a smile on their face and with something to think about. So yeah, I'm giving them, but they're giving me something back. And to receive, be the recipient of awards like this is quite a gift. It's extremely humbling and very gratifying to know that they thought I did enough to deserve it.
I started doing this for myself to cope with what I thought at the time was a hopeless situation. But as time has gone by, it seems that I've been able to raise awareness of golf for the disabled and bring hope to others. Not bad for a T12 paraplegic, Dennis whispers. Who would have thought, as he lay on the sofa with his father more than 40 years ago, that the life of Dennis Walters would take the turn it has? He has played the tour. Not the tour he had hoped for, but a tour of his own making. He has played the great golf courses, been alongside the great players, and spent a life in the game that he loves.
Well, I would say, in the broadest sense of it, I would say that almost everything in my life, in one way or another, is related to golf. I mean, I've had this love of golf since I was a young boy. I really, really wanted to get good at it. And I like the challenge of it. I like the fact that it's something you can do by yourself if you'd like, or you can join with others. Golf to me is a microcosm of life. You get out, whatever you put into it, that's what you get out of. You want to really focus on something, then it gives you a direction. It gives you a focus. It gives you a goal. It gives you hope. And it's not easy. If it was easy and everyone played well, then it would be less meaningful, I think. And I think that I think everything that I've the places I've been, the people I've met, that I would never have done that without golf. And listen, golf has given me far more than I've given back. Now, I've tried because of my circumstances here, because of the way this thing worked out, I've tried to leave golf a little bit better than when I found it. But still, to me, golf owes me nothing. I owe everything to golf. And I think that I still enjoy doing this. I still am excited about trying to get better. I'm trying to improve in everything I do. And I think that a lot of the things like that from golf, if they were transferred by more people into everyday life, I think things would be better. So I personally think everyone can benefit from golf. It's just, it's a very, it's something I'm proud of. I'm proud of the game of golf because it's here, it's great, and it's so life changing. And I think that it's just, I'm happy that I found it. I'm happy I maintained it, even though there were many, many dark days when I said, you know what, this is just not going to work. And I would have been so much the poorer for either giving up or not trying as hard as I possibly could. Because I can tell you this, I've given this my best effort. I've never half-hearted one of these shows, or I've never gone out there and practiced and just gone out there for the hell of it. I have a purpose in going out there, and it gives you a sense of accomplishment, and it gives you a sense of, you know what? Okay, so I didn't do so great, but you know what? I tried my best. And I'll get it next time. Or I'm not going down without a fight. It's just I just think that there's way more here than most people actually realize, and you can learn that. And by playing golf with somebody, you can tell what kind of personality they have, what kind of person they are, and it's a real window into seeing what people are all about. And not to mention the physical benefits, the mental, the emotional benefits, all of this stuff. Every one of these guys who play, they're big business guys, and they say they want to get out because it helps clear their head. They're not thinking about their troubles. They're not worried about their business. They're out there concentrating on golf. All the athletes say the same thing. People with disabilities, they get away from the wounded soldiers. They come home. They're in rough shape, either physically or emotionally, and they get out there and they swing a golf club and they feel better. It's far better medicine than any pill you can take, in my opinion. And golf means so much to me. I have a pretty wide focus of what golf means to me, and I know that's broadened by my situation, because I would be like every other person trying to play in tournaments and be a tournament player and just focus on what you shoot. But yeah, you know, there's a lot more to focus on besides the score. And as I get older, and because of my circumstance, I see that even more clearly. And that's why I'm so anxious to get this in the hands of other people, because I know this is like, it's like an antidote for a lot of ills that people have. And I think if it's our responsibility to get this exposed to as many people as possible, because it's a life-changing experience. And I think you can experience that on whatever level you get involved with. It's, even if you're just barely involved, I think it still can help you.
Throughout his life as a golfer with disability, Dennis has tried to encourage others to participate in a game which has been a constant joy in his life. He has changed people, challenged their beliefs, and raised their expectations. One person who will never be the same again was his doctor. Remember that doctor that said he would never walk or play golf again? Well, Dennis did go back, He went back to the hospital and took the doctor out in front, where he hit several shots over the road and onto the golf course. The doctor stood open-mouthed, leaned forward and said he would never again make such a prognosis. Never stop dreaming is the advice from Dennis. And if one dream fades, then get another.
Well, what I've tried to do all these years, I think will answer your question. What I've tried to do this all these years is to put forth a universal message. In my particular case, because I love golf so much, I am trying to show people what's possible. And I'm using golf as the vehicle. And because of that, I think I've been able to get a lot of people either back to the game of golf or to become interested in the game of golf. And that pleases me to no end, because I know that as much as anyone, the joy that golf can give to you, and it really doesn't, I mean, it's about playing as best as well as you can. And if you look at it in that perspective, like earlier when I told you that it bothered me a great deal, I solved this problem by not looking back to how I used to play, but looking forward and seeing if I could get any better at playing golf sitting down. And when I did see my improvement, which to me is the real essence of golf, improving, no matter what level you're playing on. So I started to feel better about myself and my golf. And so by doing these shows, I'm putting forth a universal message. Yes, I want every person who thinks that they have no shot at swinging a golf club to have that opportunity. Because most people, I don't know what the percentage is, but it would be my guess that a high percentage of people who think they have no interest or no chance of playing golf because of their physical situation, whether it's an amputee or it's a blind person or it's a wheelchair player, when they see that they can accomplish this and at least get out there in the fresh air, the sunshine, be with their friends, make new friends, learn valuable life lessons from golf, come on, who doesn't want a part of that? And so when they get out there and they can accomplish something they thought was totally impossible, you'd be surprised. It has wide-ranging ramifications on all other aspects of their lives. And that, to me, is even more important than the golf part of it. Yes, sir, I want everyone who wants the opportunity to get out here and do whatever it takes to swing a golf club. But if you're broadening that horizon, to me, that's even better. And that's what I've done in these shows. I feel like that's my contribution, because I'm telling my story during the show. I'm using myself as an example to challenge people at my show to do something in their life they didn't think they could. I want them to dream. I want them to have big dreams. And a dream to me is not something you have at night. It's having a positive thought in your head, having it in your heart, doing whatever it takes to make it come true. That's a real dream in my book. And every person should have one. And the big deal is, if you have a dream and it doesn't work out, that's okay, because the solution is simple. Get a new dream. And that's exactly what I did. And that's exactly what I do at every show. Challenge each person in the audience, do something in their life that they thought was impossible. And never let anyone tell you that you can't do something or that your dream is impossible. And if you're willing to work hard and hang in there, you'd be surprised what can happen. Big things come from these dreams, and I'm living proof of that. And that's why I feel like when I do this stuff and I say this stuff, I have 41 years of credibility. And that, I think that helps me to impart this message to others.
Wow. You've never stopped dreaming. And do you have any dreams for the future about where golf should go, about where golf for the disabled should go, that you'd like to share with us?
Well, that's one of the things that this interview is I'm extremely pleased and delighted that you found me and can hopefully share this with as many people as possible. Because listen, if you're a whatever your level of injury is, and you can do this. I mean, it would be, you have to have some level of ability with your hands. And if that's not possible, then we need to find some device that can help someone who could at least maybe putt by using, for example, if they were quadriplegic, maybe we can come up with something that they could putt or chip with, have enough force to propel the ball. But if you're somebody like me, I'm a T12 paraplegic, but I know guys who are like T6, T8, they can play, they play golf. And my feeling is, if you're one of these folks who are like me and you're sitting in a wheelchair, one of the last things you think you'd be able to do is to play golf. What I want to do is I want to see a campaign of some sort that's an information campaign that shows people with disabilities playing golf. And it's a little different for the wheelchair players, because if you're an amputee and you want to play golf, well, you basically have the resources of 50 years of amputee golf, or and the same thing with the blind, and they've already got it figured out. They know how to do it, and there are thousands of examples of this. And so, but the wheelchair players, which is my area, so I'm particular to that group, and I want to see a campaign where it says, okay, if you want to play golf from a wheelchair, now most of the time you're going to need some sort of a device. Okay, and I do a lot of shows where these single rider carts, which are actually a takeoff on my invention, I see them there. Hey, how many times is this used per year? Like 5. Come on. The reason why they're not used is because nobody knows it's possible. So we have to first have an information campaign, show it's possible, show other people doing it. Then we have to get, I want to make a device that's like a seat. It's permanently mounted on the end of the driving range, and it's far enough away where you take this device out at night, and it would simulate a seat on a golf cart. The same thing. The only thing is you can't move it. So this is for the wheelchair player that doesn't have access to one of these single rider carts, doesn't have the money to buy one because they're expensive, but he can still start to see if he likes it. He can do everything he can in the single rider cart except move. But it would give him a chance to, he can watch this information campaign, go down. I want to have these at all the public golf courses, and everybody go down. This seat could be built for not hardly any money, and it's taken up. Doesn't take up a permanent spot, yet it can be used at any time by the wheelchair player. And then, once you got a line, 10 people, then that's the time for that course to buy the single rider cart, because it's going to be used. So, yeah, I want every person, my dream would be to have every single person who wants the opportunity to experience the joy that golf can bring to their lives, I want them to have a golf experience. And to me, that doesn't necessarily mean playing 18 holes. That means chipping and putting, pitching, hitting bunker shots, contests, putting contests with your friends, your kids, chipping balls in your backyard. That's a golf experience. And that to me is hitting balls on the range. Anything like that. You get proficient enough, go play 2 or 3 or 4 holes. You get really good, play 9. You get really where you like it, play 18. But that to me, that would be my hope for the future. And I think if we can get the cooperation, we just had a meeting with the USGA. We're continuing to get this going. I want to use your experience, because you know far more than the USGA and me and everybody else does. So we want to enlist you. I already talked to the USGA, and they said that they want to reach out to you and your organization. And we really want to see this thing go places, because I think it has the tremendous possibility to, okay, add players to the game, fine. But this has the ability, in my humble opinion, to change lives and make things better in all aspects of a person's life with a disability, because I would bet every cent that I have that that's a true statement. It has to. It has to give you a better attitude. It has to keep you more physically fit. It has to get you more involved with others socially. You'll make more friends. It has to improve the quality of a person's life. So, yeah, it'd be great to see a lot more people out there playing golf.
Dennis, thank you for that, and it's been fascinating to chat with you. I'm sure we're going to have a round two on this one at some point.
Anytime. I enjoy talking with you, and I want to talk to you more about this USGA project.
Yeah, well, I'm all for that. So let's do that. Let's set up a time, and we can just have a chat without the recording on, and you know, we take it from there.
Yes, sir.